The nuclear family with two parents and a couple of kids is not the norm anymore, less and less so over time, in fact. One big trend that's replaced it, many more people are living alone.
But that's not the whole story. Recent statistics find more adults living in multi-generational families, with young women living with their parents in numbers not seen since the 1940s. Senior citizens are finding roommates. Families and individuals are joining co-housing projects, and living alone can mean a lot of different things for different people who are finding ways to stay connected in and out of their homes.
Our next guest digs into these trends. She traveled around the country to meet people and find out what home means to them. Bella DiPaolo is a project scientist in psychology at the University of California, Santa Barbara. She's the author of How We Live Now, Redefining Home and Family in the 21st Century. Bella, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with the people who are living alone. You found that living alone actually means a lot of different things depending on who you're talking to. As you went around the country, what were some of the different approaches you saw to life alone?
Yes, well, people who count as living alone by the Census Bureau those numbers have increased tremendously. But some people who are living alone actually are part of a bigger community. So they might be, as you mentioned in your introduction, part of a co-housing community where everybody has their own place, but they also share a common house where they might get together for meetings or meals occasionally. So that's one very organized version. Or sometimes people come up with kind of ad hoc ways of being alone and together, such as sharing a duplex or creating some other kind of situation where you are alone and you have your own place, but you have friends right nearby, maybe in the same building or on the same block or in the same city, and maybe you've even moved to a certain place together to be with people you know and care about, but you still want a place of your own.
When we talk about living alone, how much of that is by choice and how much is economic necessity?
Well, the more people have economic freedom, the more resources they have financially, the more likely they are to choose to live alone. So it's something that people get to choose because they have the resources to do so. But even people who really could live by themselves in a really nice place sometimes don't want that. They either want to live with other people or they want to live close to other people so that they have that mix of time alone and time together, privacy, autonomy, but also connection and togetherness.
I think sometimes when you see the stats about the trends from people living in nuclear families to living alone, some people see a synonym between living alone and being lonely. Sounds like that's not the case.
Oh, you're so right. That is one of the biggest misconceptions about people who live alone and one of the biggest misconceptions about people who are single. You know, we even use alone as a synonym. That is actually a defining characteristic of being single. And yet, what an overwhelming amount of new research is showing is that single people and people who live alone are actually more connected to other people than people who are married are. So they have more connections to, spend more time with, exchange more help with their friends, their neighbors, their siblings, their parents. They are more likely to contribute to the life of the city, so they take more classes, they get involved in more civic activities, they go out to restaurants more. So really, you know, we used to think of the nuclear family as the social glue that held our community and our society together. But it turns out when you look at the actual data from systematic research, it's single people and people who live alone who are doing that.
So what's going on with people in nuclear families? Are they just sitting at home staring at each other?
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, I'm an anecdote. Yeah. I'm a homebody, you know.
Yes, there are these great longitudinal studies that follow the exact same people over time and look at what their lives are like when they're single and then how they change when they get married. And what they find is that people become, on the average, obviously not every single person, but on the average, people become more insular once they get married. They pay less attention to their friends, They pay less attention to their siblings. They have less contact with their parents. And it's all about, like you said, looking at each other.
That's not a very rosy picture.
I'm cool with it. That's pretty much my life, yeah. We're talking to Bella DiPaolo. She's a project scientist of psychology at the University of California, Santa Barbara. She's the author of How We Live Now, Redefining Home and Family in the 21st Century, talking about trends in what we call home, what we call family. Living alone is one of them. And Bella, multi-generational families. We mentioned research is from, I think, the Pew Research Center, finding a lot of young women are living with their parents now more than any other time since, we're talking the 1940s here. So what's up? Multi-generational families.
Well, part of it was the recession. So people moved in together because they couldn't afford to live on their own. But a very interesting, more recent Pew report came out showing that even after the most recent recession ended, the younger generation was still living with their parents. They hadn't moved out. And in fact, there was a slight increase. And the Pew researchers were baffled by that. They looked at all these different explanations. None of them accounted for the data. But what I think they missed is the interpersonal one, the psychological one. Young adults and their parents are very different today than young adults in their relationship with their parents were a generation or two ago. Namely, today's young adults and their parents actually like each other. They have more in common. You know, it's not like the days of the 60s and 70s when the younger adults were dressing and thinking and acting and liking music that their parents couldn't fathom. And they really, the two generations looked at each other like utter aliens. And it's just not true anymore. And so, in general, again, it's not true for everyone, but in general, the young adults who live with their parents find that, yes, it's good financially, but they also like the experience. And their parents, in systematic surveys, say that they also like having their young adult kids there. And in fact, they like it as much as parents whose kids have left the nest like their living situation.
So wait, both of those things are equally appreciated? Kids out of the nest and kids back in the nest?
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Huh.
It is especially amazing because there's been so much bad mouthing of this trend, you know, saying the parents are helicopter parents who are ruining their children, and the children are Generation Stockton. You know, all those bad things that people come up with that make these adults, young adults, and their parents seem awful. And, you know, those are opinions, but when you look at the actual research, it's not like that. You know, which is not to say that there aren't bad permutations of this, and of course there are, but on the average, it works out well.
Well, that's the younger generations. Let's move to the older generations now. I've seen some things. This is getting more anecdotal. Maybe you can tell us if this is real or not. Like AARP has talked about this. Seniors are more and more seeking roommates. So these are seniors who may be living independently at home, not in a, looking for a homesteading or anything like that, but they want, you know, the Golden Girls scenario, I guess.
Yes. I did find some of that in my research, too, where they come together and live together and share all the joys that were illustrated in the Golden Girls TV series. And again, it's good financially. You know, if you're on a fixed income or a limited budget for whatever reason, it helps to share all these expenses rather than have them all on your own. But, and of course, you can live in a nicer neighborhood maybe than you could if you were living on your own and paying for everything by yourself. But on top of that, there's the companionship. So that part of it is really attractive. And the sharing of, you know, how was your day, the kind of everyday interactions where you're sharing your life, not just the house. And also getting help with all the chores and so forth that need to be done. If you have several housemates, then each of the different housemates can choose to do what they mind the least, and everybody has less to do in total than they would if they were managing the whole household on their own.
I'm curious about the age group of the seniors that we're talking about here, if there's a concentration in a particular decade, and also how widespread this is. We've been hearing about this, but I haven't come across anyone personally doing it. It seems a fascinating thing, but how widespread is it?
It is increasing. It's not a huge number, but if you look at, for example, households comprised of people who are not related, in 1940, I think it was 1%, and now it's more than 6%. So it's a huge increase percentage-wise, but it's still not a huge number of people who are actually doing this. And that was for overall, not just for seniors. I do think it's something that's increasing, and you see different versions of it from people doing it on their own, just knowing people or trying to find people. And then there are more systematic resources out there. There's something called Golden Girls Homes that helps people find roommates. There's a National Shared Housing Resource Center that was actually started by Maggie Kuhn, the famous, aging activist. So I do think that it's something that's likely to catch on.
Talking to Bella DiPaolo, she's the author of the book How We Live Now, Redefining Home and Family in the 21st Century. We're talking about what makes a home these days in the United States with more people living alone, some other people finding new ways to create a household and co-housing with roommates or living with their families.
And you can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you live alone? And if so, was it a conscious decision or did it just kind of work out that way? Do you live with your parents or maybe with your adult children or in co-housing or with roommates? Call and tell us the pros and the cons at 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation about the way we live in the United States with a growing trend toward living alone. Many people are trying new ways also of living together. Our guest is Bella DiPaolo, author of How We Live Now, Redefining Home and Family in the 21st Century.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Maybe share your experience. Do you live alone? Is that lonely or do you feel more connected than maybe your coupled up peers? Do you have roommates, live in co-housing, a multi-generational household? Are you in a Golden Girls scenario? Maybe a senior living with other seniors to share companionship and the bills. Tell us about it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to a caller. Brad is on the line in Glendale. Brad, hi.
Yes. I teach college students, and so I know that you mentioned that a lot of students or a lot of people in their 20s are living with their parents by choice, even though the recession is over. But I also know from talking with my students their financial struggles and that a lot of them simply couldn't afford an apartment, much less a house. And so a lot of them are still living with their parents, still out of financial necessity. So the recession's over, but they're not necessarily getting the high-paying jobs that can allow $800, $1,200 a month rent.
Brad, thanks.
That is factored in.
Brad, thanks a lot for the call. So, Bella, still, even after the recession, financial reasons, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad arrangement, you were saying.
Right, totally. If the parents and their kids enjoy each other's company and don't get on each other's nerves and help each other out, it can be a great arrangement. And, it can be especially good for people in this economy where so much of it is putting together what you can do and finding work that works for you and not having this steady income in a corporation that pays a role. So I think it's good to have a financial head start that you can create by living with your parents.
Now, one interesting thing about this trend seems to be the spaces that are getting purposed for these new ways of living. I'm hearing about, are you writing about abandoned office buildings and newly constructed houses, but with maybe five or six master suites and a big common area. This must be a change.
Oh, it is. And it's happening across the whole age range. So with younger people, you see this trend toward what they sometimes call apartments or tiny apartments that are in a building that also has a lot of shared space so that people have their tiny little space, but they also have space where they can get together to barbecue or meet or share meals or have other entertainment. And then you have all these buildings that are getting renovated in ways that allow each person to have their own space, maybe their own apartment, and yet there is a certain companionship about it because they're rebuilt in a way that caters to the desire for togetherness that people have, as well as their desire for their own privacy.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. We've got Kim on the line in Milwaukee. Kim, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you want to tell us about, Kim?
Oh, I just wanted to talk about, well, when I was in college, I always had roommates. And I found that I really liked having roommates. And at this point in my life, my boyfriend and I live together, and we definitely had the means to get our own place, but we don't want to. We like having roommates. And it's been kind of a point of contention between me and, like, a lot of baby boomers. Just, they don't get it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, our parents just don't understand why I want to keep having my roommate.
And sure. And, Kim, before we let you go, can I ask how old you are now?
I'm 28.
28. And so, yeah, are we adjusting our cultural expectations now? The baby boomer, she's saying, what are you doing still living with roommates? You're 28. People might say that about somebody living with their parents, and there's a stigma there. Are we adjusting our culture to match the reality? Bella.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were still talking to her. Yes, you know, our cultural perceptions are always lagging behind the way we live. So the way we actually choose to live just runs ahead, and we do what we find is works best for us, like the example that your caller just said. And yet, you tell somebody else about it, and they're like, what? Are you kidding me? And, you know, it goes both in both directions. She just described being part of a couple, but wanting to live with other people as well, which I also found in my research. But then you have the exact opposite extreme, where people who are part of committed couples, maybe they're married, maybe they're even married with kids, decide to live in places of their own, not because their jobs keep them apart or their educational pursuit keeps them apart, but because that's what they want. They want their own space. And it even has its own way of describing it, living apart together, L-A-T. Hmm. And that's growing, too. So I think what I found mostly is that everybody wants some combination of time alone and time together. But the ratios that they want are vastly different. And the of all these different ways of living that I looked at, only one way of living is becoming less popular, and that's nuclear family living.
The staring at each other model, yeah.
Yeah. If you were to knock on doors across the United States at random, you would be more likely to be met by a single person living alone than a family of mom, dad, and the kids. Which is really amazing when you think of just how commonplace nuclear family living was in the middle of the last century.
Well, I want to get to one more caller, but first I want to ask you very quickly, is this happening everywhere, these kinds of new models, or is this something in my mind this just happens in New York City, or it really just happens in San Francisco or Los Angeles? Does it happen in Wisconsin?
You know, I think, yes, it does happen in the middle of the country. Co-housing communities can be found there, and in Michigan, I know there are a number of them. There are more on the coast, that's true. But there's a lot going on in the middle of the country, too. Some of the families I interviewed, some of the people I interviewed were in Minnesota and Chicago. So, yeah, I found people innovating everywhere.
Let's bring on Amanda in Richfield now. Amanda, hi.
Hi, guys. I just wanted to describe my unique situation. My husband and I bought a large farmhouse 2 years ago. We're 28. And because of student loan debt, two of my sisters and one of their boyfriends also have moved in. We joke that it's the commune, and all of our friends and family members make fun of us, but really it works out really well. We're all on different shifts. We rarely see each other. We have someone to take care of our pets when we're gone, and it just really works out well for us.
Amanda, thanks a lot for telling us about that. And Bella, I think that, you know, that might sound like a pitch for a sitcom in some situations, but they're, it sounds
true.
Like they're making it work, and a lot of people are doing their own thing and coming up with solutions they're happy with.
They are. It's very impressive. People are being so innovative and creating the lives that work for them.
And what trends are you going to be watching for in the coming years? Where do you expect to see growth areas of some of this new stuff we're talking about?
You know, I think that people who are older, seniors, are really on the cutting edge of this because, you know, they really saw what happened in the generations before them and say, I am not ending up in an institution. And, of course, young adults, because they're staying single longer than ever before and sometimes staying single for life, they're going to be innovators too. But really, it's across the age spectrum.
Well, Bella, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a lot of fun. Hope we can talk to you again.
Thank you. Okay.
That was Bella DiPaolo. She's a project scientist in psychology at the University of California, Santa Barbara, author of the book How We Live Now, Redefining Home and Family in the 21st Century. Still time to share how you are living in the 21st century. Are you living alone? Are you with a nuclear family, one of the dying out breed, it sounds like? Do you have a unique roommate or family situation? Head over to the Central Time Facebook page and tell us about it there. I'd love to hear your stories and how you are fitting into this changing landscape of the way we live. Again, share your story. And by the way, see an article by Bella at the Central Time Facebook page. I'll look forward to what you have to say there.
And it seems like maybe part of this is nuclear families need to get out and do more stuff. It doesn't sound very attractive when you're listening that they sit at home, basically.
No, it's awesome. I've turned into such a homebody, and I love it.
We're both nuclear families, and I, too, like sitting in front of
but
the hearth.
But you get out more than I do.
Well, yeah, I get
but,
out.
But I mean, there are like, biblical hermits who got out more than I do. Let's be fair about that.
So. Well, you know, you have a busy job. We'll cut you some slack. So, yeah, let's see what people can do to make that a little more exciting.